minutes, 25 seconds. 20 seconds and counting. T-minus 15 seconds. Guidance is internal. 12, 11, 10, 9. Ignition sequence start. 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0. All engine running. Liftoff. We have a liftoff. 32 minutes past the hour. Tower cleared.
And as Apollo 11 does its roll program, this podcast now does its roll program. The tape is rolling. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are in the world. My name is Grant Cameron, and you're listening to the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. Thank you for taking time from your life to be here.
Okay, we're back for session two. I want to do another session with my friend Walter Rooker, and we're into talking about physical mediumship, which I think is one of the most important things that should be studied. Let me ask you a question about, we were talking as we ended our last session about famous people coming through. Who is the one that brings through Louis Armstrong? And can you tell some of those stories? And does this happen like every time? Do you have something this dramatic happen in every session with these, like the big guys? I mean, say a guy that's just starting would only have a few events happening, but guys like, you know, Kai Muga, is there always like a big sort of wow event? And I guess we should point out for people, one of the things I always point out, the difference between physical mediumship and say trans mediumship is that in physical mediumship, everybody in the room sees what's going on. So it's not like it's evidence just for one person that, yeah, that was my grandfather or whatever. It's something that everybody can see, and you have trumpets flying around. You can maybe talk about some of that.
Yeah. When you say everybody can see, it means that everybody has some opportunity to see that. Now, look, you know, when you're sitting in a circle of 35, 40 people, between the seance cabinet where the physical medium sits and the back of that horseshoe where those 40 people would sit, it could be a distance enough where there may be limited visibility on some things. Some things only happen in front of certain participants in the seance. So you may not be able to see, you'll always be able to hear, but you may not be able to see something that's being shown or whatnot. But the truth is there is an experience there, you know, for everybody to be had. And the majority of time, everybody does get to see the phenomenon. You talk about trumpets. I was looking at a David Thompson physical mediumship session. David likes to bring through several different kinds of individuals. Does he always have a wow event? Does he always have something that is outstanding in there? Well, that depends. If you've been to a lot of his sessions, you'll find that a lot of them are somewhat similar, that he doesn't necessarily always have a super surprise guest, let's say. But he'll bring through William, who is his lead spirit guide, and William kind of is like the MC, and he'll walk around. You can hear William walk. William will put his hands on your head. You can feel, just like Leslie King was talking about, you feel it, you can sense the warmth in it. He did it to me, and he stood on the ends of my toes with his boots to make sure that I knew he was physical from head to foot. And we had a little conversation about that as he was returning to a cabinet. But the phenomenon issue is really something, because let's take just simple trumpet movement. Now, people say, well, you're talking about trumpet, like, no, we're talking about the old trumpets, like the old cheerleader megaphones. Yeah, exactly. And they're smaller and thinner usually, and often they're made of cardboard. You know, they're not for what they used to be for in the early days of physical mediumship. The trumpet was actually a voice projection unit. The physical medium would put an ectoplasmic voice box inside the trumpet. and then speak through that voice box, and the trumpet would actually magnify the sound. Okay, we don't need to do that anymore. They've come up with better ways to get their voices heard. But I was sitting with David Thompson. I was right over next to the table where all the little paraphernalia goes. He has some Tibetan bells and a couple of trumpets and some other items that it gets picked up and thrown around the room and moved around and rung and played. And I'm sitting there, and I'm telling you, I'm less than 2 feet away from this this trumpet that is sitting there. And before I could bat my eye, that trumpet went from off my shoulder to the ceiling and splat on the ceiling so fast that I promise you, there was no way in the world in light, much less in the dark, you'd have seen it. And then from there, it's liable to do anything. The spirit, usually again, through ectoplasmic rods, typically, this is ectoplasm extruded in very, very thin-like rods that then grasp things like the trumpet and then fly it around the room, physically move it around the room up and down. And these trumpets usually have reflecting tape on them. So even though you're in the dark, you can see the tape reflecting, you know where it is. I've had them come from one corner of the room and stop straight right in front of my nose. And then phew, gone. And then phew, right back again. And do it over and over again, because they're making fun of me, I guess. I don't know what the reason is for that. But the point is that the phenomenon is exceptional, especially in the movie seances. And trumpetism is one of those things that are just really, it's really fun to be involved. Let me tell you this quick story.
Yeah.
Tibetan bells. If you ever feel ectoplasm, a lot of times the first time you feel it, it will feel as if it is rough texture. It isn't always nice and warm and soft. Sometimes it's rough textured when you get to feel it.
So you have felt it a couple of times?
Yeah. Kai has little animals that will run across you, ectoplasmic animals that will run across you early in the seance. Okay. And you're allowed to touch and pet those. So I've had ectoplasmic cats running through my legs and dogs jump up on my lap, and you can actually touch those. And he'll tell you that too. So you touch these, but these you can't touch. So you touch them, and they have a different feel to them. You know, and I've felt ectoplasmic hands before, and they have a different, highly textured feel. It's kind of difficult to explain.
So you've had this same experience that Leslie had, but with the hand. Is it just the hand?
Oh yeah.
And that's what people should, I guess, know, is that it's not always the full body. It may be just a head or a hand or a part of a body that's.
Yes. Yeah. It can be just a hand. It can be a hand that pops up and waves at you. But I've also seen complete full materializations of individuals come out of the ectoplasm, just roll right up out of the floor and roll right back down into it. Tar, and especially in the kind of movie seances, will be a full ectoplasmic being, short the feet maybe, but touchable, seeable, hearable, observable.
So explain for people the concept. So the ectoplasm is produced by the physical medium's body. They extrude it, and then whatever the beings are, the people are coating themselves with that. Am I got that correct? To enter the physical?
Yeah, the spirit world is a higher vibrational world.
Okay.
And in order for them to appear, many of the spirits, for them to appear physically to us, they have to have some protection between the differences in the energy of our environment and the energy of their environment. Consequently, one of the things that they can use is an ectoplasmic covering, which in effect shields them from those vibrational differences. We talked a little bit about this pre-show. Grant, there can be some extremely volatile experiences when you meet beings that are of a higher vibration. And they understand that. That's their intention, is not to freak people out. Their intention is to communicate, to open up, you know, spiritual pathways and those types of things. So they're very concerned about being able to do that in a realistic way as possible. And the best way that they can do that is to show themselves as a physical being using some type of thin or even thick extruded ectoplasmic covering. So it acts like a bodysuit, I guess, maybe, like a spaceman, you know, astronaut might go up and they have to put a suit on because of the different physical environment up there. Something very much like that. And those things typically do not last very long, by the way. We're not talking about a spirit coming in, sitting down for 5 hours and having a conversation with you, ectoplasmic covering. We're talking about in and out 10, 15 minutes at the most in any particular sample situation.
And that's one of the reasons why they don't want sort of newbies in there, because they don't want someone freaking out, because that will destroy the whole seance, right? If somebody suddenly freaks out and heads for the door and that kind of thing, right?
Yeah, well, first of all, you can freak out all you want. You can hit out any doors you want, but they're going to be locked. And if you're the circle leader, it really presents a problem, because I've been to one where that has happened. And you don't have really any other choice here, because you've got a medium sitting in a chair. You could have ectoplasm or particles of ectoplasm still in the room. You have a completely blacked out environment and a locked door. And I mean locked, I'm talking about locked on the inside, locked on the outside. And there's no way you're going to let this person out, because on top of it being locked, it's also totally covered in plastic wrap and whatnot to keep any light from coming in.
Yeah.
So there's just no way you're going to get out. So the only choice you got is just kind of try to talk somebody down a little bit. Say, hey, you know, come on, just settle down a little bit. Everything's going to be fine. But the best way is just to eliminate that individual from coming in the beginning. It's physical mediumship is not for everybody. And it's better to scare somebody off or just tell somebody no and have them really greatly disappointed and that it's happened than it is to bring the wrong person in and endanger everybody in the seance, especially the physical medium itself. I mean, can you imagine this call, 911 call? Really? I mean, you know, hi, I got a problem here in room 8. Here in Fort Lauderdale, Florida. It seems like our physical medium has, retracted all his ectoplasm. I think he might be dead. Now, what kind of response are you going to get to that? You're going to get clunk.
You mentioned before that you can sort of tell when a seance is going to go bad, when the vibration is there. Can you talk about this concept of raising the vibration? And Mission Rama does that. If you're familiar with this Mount Shasta stuff, where they will have events where they're trying to do oming and meditation, and they're trying to raise their vibration, and the beings or the aliens or whatever comes down, they're trying to lower their vibration, and they sort of open up this sort of a portal Zendra thing in between where they interact. And I understand the same sort of concept is taking place, where they're trying to match the vibrations.
Yeah, you got to take me to the Mission Rama stuff, by the way. I think that stuff is fabulous. You know, that stuff is unbelievable. And anybody that hasn't looked at Brant's Mission Rama stuff needs to just, after the interview is over here, needs to run out to YouTube and run to his website or wherever he can find and pick it up. It's just absolutely amazing stuff. And you kind of lost me. Are we talking about portals in particular?
Well, the vibration, the idea of singing, like some people will sing and what you're trying to do is raise the vibration. I remember you telling me that you can tell when you walk into a seance, this is going to go well. The vibration is not right. Can you talk about that?
Yeah, it's a really strange thing. And this isn't a psychic thing with me. I don't believe it is anyway. But there's a lot of us that attend seances together that know each other pretty well. There's always a new member or two or three, which is good.
Yeah.
Well screened and the like. But I tell you what, even as well screened and as well rehearsed as you have some of these people, and let them know what's going on, what's going to happen, whatnot, if they can bring in an extremely cynical attitude and that negative cynicism, and I'm not talking about skepticism now, that's an entirely different thing. Everybody's skeptical. Talking about the guys that are going to come in there looking for some way to expose it, looking for some way not to believe it. Their mind's already made up. And when you bring, one of the things that happens pre-seance is that everybody gets together and talks with the medium, and we just, you know, get to know each other and just hang around a little bit, sit in a circle and talk and get everything out of the way. And then the physical medium goes off and comes back and we start the sounds. Well, in that period of time, it's just like any social group, though, Grant, you know, people will, they are who they are. They are their vibration.
Yeah.
And it doesn't take a whole lot to figure out when you've got somebody or some bodies in a group that are pulling backwards on the vibration of the group, because most everybody that is there, if not everybody that is there, is excited to be there. You know, it's not like they're dumb believers. It's just that they're expert witnesses and they are ready to see what the next step is, what the next piece of information could be, what the next experience could be. But if you get one or two in there that are not of that honesty, I think is the best word. I think that's the best word. It just doesn't feel like an honest situation. I could be reading things into it. I haven't been wrong yet. Tomorrow's another day, though.
We talked about voices. I remember you sending me a videotape one time, which I thought should be probably set up at all because it was so impressive, where you had the, it was some sort of technology where they had these things on the wall where you could actually tell where the voice was coming from. And so we're getting into direct voice phenomena here, where in on this video, you're listening to the sounds taking place and the spirit or whatever is talking. And he says, I'm over here. No, I'm over here. And you can see that in the film, the voice is moving around the room. Because everybody assumes, well, the guy snuck out of the little corner and he's throwing his voice or whatever. But that was so impressive when I saw that. Is that done quite a bit where they're able to do this technology where you can actually track where the voice is actually in the room? Because that was pretty impressive stuff. And no, then let's get into direct voice phenomena with, you know, the great, his name is escaping me, but this idea of direct voice phenomena.
Well, you're talking about Leslie Flint?
Yeah, Leslie Flint. Yeah.
Okay. All right. Well, let's go back to the Warren Kaler seance where they put up hearing devices around the room to detect where sounds were coming from. Yeah. They not only detected the sound, but they also recorded the sound. Now, the idea behind this is that the cynicists will tell you, well, the guy's just projecting his voice, like you say, or he's coming out of the cabinet. Or whatever it is, you know, whatever, you know, the next line of BS is.
Yeah.
And so Kaler had a scientist, an audio specialist contact him and say, well, you know, one thing we could do is we could set up these devices around the room, the seance room. And then as these voices come out, it will tell us, it will record the voices, but it also tells the location from where that voice came from. You know, people will say, well, what do you mean? You know, because my voice comes from here, your voice comes from your mouth. But that's not the way it works in physical mediumship. A spirit can project his voice or take his voice or have his voice appear anywhere in the room that he wants. And if that is the case, and you've got a physical medium who's tied to a chair, gagged and bound and you know, and is completely immobilized, to find that the voices are coming from the top of the ceiling and then bouncing over here, or as they did in that particular thing that I sent to you, it was really kind of funny. He said, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here, I'm here. And they jump around the room and say, I'm over here, I'm over here, I'm over here. Leslie Flint and his direct voice phenomenon, his greatest physical medium, I think, still to this day. And Leslie had a voice box coming out the side of his mouth, outside his neck here. And he'd speak through that, and he'd have typically four or five people in a very small room, you know, 5x6, 6x8. I mean, nobody's going anywhere.
Yeah.
And his guys would come out and play with him. You know, some people would come to the door and knock them one in, and his spirit would go to the door and say, we're in session, go away. And knock back on the door. But this is this idea, again, that in one of the ways that you are can show as proof that these guys aren't casting their voice, aren't magicians or alchemists or whatever the heck you want to call them, is this technology which shows where the voices come, who the voices are, the separateness of the voices, the frequency of the voices, like your frequency has, your voice has one, I have one, and places them in locales around the room. And you just can't, you know, you can't turn that kind of stuff off. and just say, well, gosh, there's just nothing really to that, because there's a whole lot to that. And it's probably still to this day, I think, one of my favorite things when people want to talk about physical mediumship and physical mediums being hoaxes and whatnot. I just show them that thing. Matter of fact, that may have been one of the first things that I ever said to you, because you asked me how I was trying to get in contact with you. I don't remember who it was. We had some friend or somebody that watched your podcast. You mentioned physical mediumship and whatnot. And she wrote to you and said, well, if you want to know about physical mediumship, you need to meet Kevin Lee and Walter Rucker and maybe others. And she copied me off. And then I noticed you came back on, you were talking about physical mediumship, and I just wrote you a really tacky note. It was really a tacky email.
Yeah, I remember. Yeah.
Yeah. And it said, you know, look, dude, if you want to talk about physical mediumship, let's get some physical mediums on here. Let's get some people that have been there. Let's get people that sponsor this up. I mean, you're just, you know, talking out your Canadian self down there. And it's just, so that's how we got together was, let's put truth to cause here.
Maybe you should send me that just in case I don't have it. Maybe we can attach that little video to the to this thing, where, because it's pretty impressive when you see it. I mean, it's like, you know, then you can say, oh, the guy that's filming it is hoaxing it, and the scientist is in on it, but it just gets like crazy stuff. I mean,
it's just, you keep running down what you call the rabbit hole on that, and you know, if you want to just disbelieve it, that's fine.
Yeah,
there's no intent or necessity in you taking in anything that you and I have said today and believe you. It's information. Do with it what you want.
Yeah,
and do with it what you can.
But the people who are doing the seances go through a lot of work. For example, talk about what with the gagging in the chair, and then sometimes where the chair ends up outside the circle, where they, or the guy's upside down and stuff like that. Talk about that kind of, these precautions that people take. And I know, like, I think Leslie Kane, I think she brings her own tie straps in and stuff like that, where people go through a lot of work to show that this isn't possible.
Yeah. Matter of fact, I often brought my own physical tie straps.
Yeah.
And changed them for the ones that they were using. Now, may have been identical looking.
Yeah.
But just to eliminate that as a possibility, I've never had any physical medium or circle leader ever say, well, I don't want to use yours. It's the same thing.
Yeah.
But they came from me, and I can vouch for them. I think the thing that needs to be understood is that the physical medium, this is just some guy sitting there with a microphone in his hand, announcing and seancing what's going on. He is sitting in a cabinet. He is in a chair strapped in by zip ties, by leather straps. He may or may not have a gag in his mouth. Many of the physical mediums, Leslie Flint being one, would often put liquid in their mouth. So to say, okay, if it's me talking, explain to me how I'm doing this with a mouthful of liquid. And at the end of the thing, Leslie would spit the red fluid out in his mouth, same as he took it in, and just sort of look around and say, okay, what's the next objection? It's almost like going on, you know, okay, what's your next objection? Well, at some point, it's just like, okay, it's great. You know, that's enough objections. It just has run its course now. I cannot think of the gentleman. I'm trying to think of his name. He's a friend of mine, too, and I should, who did the Warren Cable. Scientists from, you know, high school lab down at St. Monica High. This guy has been doing all types of acoustic work and light work and studying physical mediumship, as you and I have, for quite some time. But I will send that to you again. It is such a great piece.
Yeah. Yeah. It's very sort of convincing. Although, as you said, it's not going to convince everybody. To talk about the Leslie Flint, because that is pretty impressive stuff. And you have a collection of this stuff that, I guess we don't have to get into the University of Manitoba, but there's some collections of this stuff. He's online, and talk about some of the people that would come through him, and you can sit there and listen to that stuff for days. I mean, he just got all these things and did it over how many years? 20 years?
At least, gosh. Yeah, it was at least 20 years. Leslie passed early 1990s, if I remember correctly, 91, 92 or so. And he was holding these seances in his house, a couple different places in England, daily. I mean, sometimes twice a day. So there were hundreds and hundreds of these things. And there was one pair of couples that sat in a lot of seances. I'm talking about hundreds of seances with them, and recorded everything and then transcribed everything. And the Leslie Flint Foundation, that's Leslie Flint, has dozens, probably more than that. I haven't been there in a while, of these things online, including the transcripts. So you can actually sit there and listen to Charles Lindbergh or somebody you may never have known, some common Joe off the street that got killed when a truck ran him over. And you can read the transcripts, which helps a little bit because they're, you know, these are British folk and they don't speak good American. And so you can listen to the transcripts and pretty much come away with a really great session of what's being said and the information that's being passed and the validity of the information. As they talk about their lives to their loved ones, to their wives that they passed on from, to their brothers and sisters and daughters and sons, as well as to people that sit in seance and know some of these people who come through many times in Leslie's seances. It's really, really the most incredible things. And the sadness of it is it's not happening now. That it happened at a time where a lot of this was buried. But let me tell you, historically, again, if you go digging, you'll find this information. It won't take you long. Pick any Leslie Flint seance you want, whether it be a celebrity or whether it be just a local Joe. Sit and spend 30 minutes, listen to it, read the transcript. If you don't come away with impressed about the afterlife and the value of spirit communication, then not much else is going to do it for you.
Do the spirit people have to learn how to do this? Sometimes you hear that they're working on experiments and they're trying to, or they talk about the thing where when you can barely hear the spirit, it's their first time and they don't know how to do it on the other side either. They're trying to communicate, but they don't know exactly how to do it. Whereas you, the same as you said, like with John Lennon, you sort of get it down and you start to get better as you come into different seances.
Yeah. One of the things that was explained, I think it was in a Flint seance. Matter of fact, it was that on their side, on the spirit side, in order to communicate through the medium and through his ectoplasmic voice box, they actually have to put their being into a somewhat similar apparatus. I'm sure it's not exactly an apparatus. And when they try to explain this, it's very difficult because they have difficulty in giving us terms that we understand. But the best way I can explain it, as it was explained to me, is that it's like putting yourself into a mask, you know, that covers you all up. And then you speak through that mask, and that mask somehow delivers that message back through the medium and out through the ectoplasmic voice box so it can be heard. So they are sitting on their side was almost what you might call equipment, machinery, something that they have to learn to do. And you can tell. I've watched Winston Churchill go from being, you could understand him, but he was never on for more than 30 seconds, to saying, Winston, it's time to go now. You know, it's been 5 minutes. We need to get on. Did I tell you about my Winston Churchill book story?
No.
Oh, so I go to the seance and Churchill comes through and he comes over to me and he says, I want you and the circle leader and another guy who happened to be a Spanish, Mexican speaking, the Spanish guy. He says, I want to dictate my book to you. And I said, well, okay. And he says, it's going to be called something like, the Prime Minister's Guide to the Afterlife or whatever it is. So cool, fine. And so I go away and I come back to the next seance. I go buy my $150 recorder. I go to the seance. I'm going to sit there and record him giving his book. You know, Warren Kaler is going to bring Warren Winston through. And so I get to back to the seance and I'm sitting there thinking right before the seance and I'm waiting for Churchill to come through and I'm sitting there thinking to myself, okay, maybe I need to ask him how long this is going to be. How long a book? You know? And he says, so he comes in the seance. And I said, yeah. And he says, oh, are there any questions for me? And I said, Winston, well, I have a question. He comes over. Well, I say he comes over. His voice comes from one end of the seance room over to directly in front of me.
Okay.
And I said, okay. I said, Winston, you want to do a book? Good. Yeah, right. Yeah, I do. I do. I really want to do a book. And he said, I'm bugging Warren, the physical medium, about this all the time. He says, I want to get this book. I said, good, good. I got the thing, got the recorder, got the time. Okay. How long is this book going to be? He says, 671 pages. And I said, okay. And then I'm doing this in my head, this calculation in my head, 671 pages, so many words per page. That's 50 hours of, 50 hours of, I said, listen, we can't do 50 hours of this. And it dawned on me. He had no concept of time.
Wow. Yeah.
What's 50 hours of him? It's nothing. And he couldn't understand why, what the problem was. So I met the physical medium outside Warren later after the seance. I said, this isn't going to work unless you're willing to sit for 25 2-hour sessions for free because I'm not paying you. And he says, he's been bugging me to death. He is on me night and day about this. He says, just forget him. I said, okay.
What did you tell Winston when he was at that point? Did you tell him we can't do it now, or what did you say to him?
No, in the following seance, the next day or whenever the next one was, I was sitting out in my car. I went back out to my car because it was cold. You know, it was like 75 degrees. And it was – well, the seance rooms are typically cold because they kick the air conditioning up to make sure everybody stays cool. Yeah, and so, you know, so I go out to get some long pants, whatever, and I sit down in the car. And Churchill comes through my car. I'm going, oh, Lord. And so, anyway, he comes and he just – are we going to do this or not? Basically, and I said, no, we're not doing this. Winston,
wow.
I said, look, I said, if you will, how about just do me one favor? I said, now, if you want to talk about extraterrestrials and you want to do like a short book or whatnot, let me know about that. He said, okay. So I didn't hear anything. I get out of the car, going back to the seance room. I said, okay, I'm going to go to the bathroom because you're going to be in there for an hour, 2 hours, you know. Yeah. Get your business done. So I'm going back to the seance room, and here comes Warren Kaler, the physical medium. It's just, you know, coincidence, right?
Yeah.
And so we're going to the same bathroom, a little stinky old bathroom, you know, the toilets. And we're in there, and I said, hey, Warren. I just talked to Churchill. I said, I want him to do something on extraterrestrials. And we started laughing because he knows Churchill's bugging him and bugging me. And I said, I'm trying to unhook him and whatnot from this thing. And he says, okay. So we laugh about it. We go back up. We get into the seance. Okay. So we're in the seance. And here comes Churchill. He comes over to me and goes, Walter, and Warren Kaler, the medium, were talking about in this bathroom, which is like 50 yards away from the seance room. And of course, you know, I don't care what, it still amazes you. And you go, oh, did you? And he goes, I'd love to talk to you about extraterrestrials sometime, and we'll have a really long conversation about that. Wow. And what he was saying was, okay, book's dead. Let's move on to another subject.
Wow.
Never did have that conversation with it yet, but I'm still looking forward to it.
Now, one of the things that's been discussed with Annie, if you know this, the story behind Communion, where they get the 170 or 200,000 letters or whatever, and Annie is reading all these letters at a great rate or whatever, she comes out and says to Whitley, she said, Whitley, whatever this UFO thing is, it has something to do with death. And you'll see this thing where beings will have aliens or whoever they are will have dead people in the ship. They've got this contact. So this is just speculation. Have you thought about this idea? What are we talking about? Are we talking about at a higher vibration? Are all these beings in the same sort of etheric world, or how do you relate all this? Because you mentioned that Kaimuga has got the aliens coming in, and I think we can get, the next time we do a session, we can bring in the Skull, and they had the blue being come in when they went to Spain. So you start getting this crossover between the aliens and the dead people.
Yeah. Well, I think that there are two things going on, Grant. You remember before I said, you know, sometimes we understand the universe like we're at the bottom of a tomato can soup.
Yeah.
You know, we think we see a lot, we don't see much at all. I think there are a couple of things going on here, but I don't really quite understand the distinct relationship between the various ethereal beings. That is, I have a tendency to believe that they don't belong in layers, you know, like a cake.
Okay, yeah.
Here's vibration level one.
Yeah. Okay.
I don't think that's right. I think that many of them, especially the most evolved and non-material physical beings, non-material beings, I think that many of them just float wherever they want to float to. They are whatever vibration they want to be. I think Bashar is saying that. You can be whatever vibration you want to be. Go wherever you want to go. We have a real difficulty understanding that because we're locked into a very, very, yeah, a very thin level of frequency. But I think a lot of them have the ability to either consciously or unconsciously move between those vibrational fields at their will. Now, does that mean that somebody that's just passed over, using a linear sense, somebody who's just passed over is all of a sudden going to be able to sing with the angels, you know, and the archangels that were considered to be the highest vibrational beings that we know of? No, but he may very well have the ability to appear here in the physical reality. He may very well have the ability to move up the vibration level from where he's at. So they have some type of ability to modulate their frequency within some levels to be able to create some movement between realms. So I don't see it as that. I see it as a soup of things, with some people having the ability to move through that soup more easily and more quickly. Now, that is what I think is what we get the extraterrestrial situation from that becomes so very important, because these beings obviously can move in between any frequency they want, many of them anyway, in any way they want. And they're holding the keys to the universe, literally the keys to the universe. Now, the question is, how much more do they understand than we do? Well, I guess we're going to find out. Open contact's coming, Grant. It's not that far away.
Yeah, that's the one thing that comes to my mind, is that sometimes you get whether it's through some of the people, physical media, maybe it's Leslie Flint people, is this idea that you live with your family and the kids that die, they grow up in the spirit world. And it's almost like it's just an extension of our world. And you wonder, are they creating that world? When you go into the other world, are you creating whatever world you believe in? Or are you thrown in? And the other thing you maybe I throw into this mix is the idea that 40% of all people who have had an abduction experience, or whatever you want to call it, a big experience, will say at one point during their experience they knew the answer to everything in the universe, which I said is another thing we should probably check out. I mean, if someone says, which would indicate that whoever put them in that state, whether they're extraterrestrials or whoever they are, would have access to that realm, this idea where all the information is out there. So that always puzzled me, this idea where a lot of people who spiritualists don't really believe in reincarnation, where they feel like there's just another level. So are we creating our reality when we get over there? Is that how you understand this? Because that always threw me off when I heard people saying, you know, that we grow up with our children. Well, then what happens to the father and mother? Well, then they got to grow up with their family, and then they got to grow up with their family, and everybody's a kid in somebody else's family. And it didn't make any sense.
Yeah, and it doesn't. And so, yes, we are. And as we create our physical reality here, we're doing the same thing in the more ethereal, non-physical worlds. Our reality is nothing more than a reflection of what we believe in and what we want to do. It's nothing more than a reflection of intention and actions. And nothing changes as you go along. You get better at it. You maybe get access to higher vibrational realms. Maybe you certainly do get all new experiences that you can add to your collection of expertise and add to your collection of knowledge. But it's still always the same thing over and over again. We're changing constantly. We're never the same person, millisecond to millisecond. And I mean that in a very literal sense. I don't mean that in a sense that, well, I'm a little bit different. No, you're completely, totally new, billion times a second. And that doesn't change. That change, I think, is constant. And if there's anything that doesn't change in the universe, and I'm convinced of this, change doesn't change. Meaning that it's constantly an evolving process. Now, a lot of people look at that and go, gosh, that's kind of scary. I want to be able to get my hands on something. I want to be able to ground into something. I want to be able to understand something. Well, you're going to be grounded. You're going to understand. You're going to make the changes. And you're going to see that the difference here is that's the way it is. Change is the constant. And once you find yourself back out of spirit, or as I like to say, returning to spirit, I don't think we ever left. I think we just came down here, took on these physical wrappings and to get the experiences that we're having, just like the one we're having today. It was just a wonderful thing, by the way. But I don't see that ever changing. And why should it? The universe, the multiverse, whatever you want to call it, we're just a perfect reflection of it, but we're also just a shard of it. And I don't think I want to go to a place where I die and I wake up and I have all the answers and I have all the same people, no offense.
Yeah.
All the same people around me that are around me now.
Yeah.
I want them to have new experiences. I want me to have new experiences. I want you to have new experiences. I want this audience to have new experiences. That doesn't mean you love them any less. It doesn't mean you're trying to forget them. But then again, it's just one very, very small portion of an eternal life. And you have to say eternal with a big E.
Yeah. Interesting, because I have an interview, you may know, I have an interview with the beings. I have these beings from England that have contact with these two women who want to talk to me Tuesday. So Tuesday at 7 o'clock London time. So if you got any questions you want to give me, because that's what they basically said. And when I heard their stuff, I heard some of their philosophy, like the oneness philosophy, like everything they said went, yeah, whatever they're in contact with is making some sense. And they had made that point. They said, look, they asked, like, where are you from? Look, we're from here. You guys are the visitors. You come in, you're only here for a couple of years, and then you depart. We've been here all the time. And it's this concept of almost like stories where we make the mistake that we, as I always point out, You suddenly assume that you are the actor on the stage. You are not the actor on the stage. You are playing an actor on a stage, and you're going to leave and go play an act someplace else. You're only here for 70 years, and you make the mistake that this is the way it is. This is where I am. And the old idea that because you played King Henry VIII in high school doesn't mean you're King Henry VIII. You just played King Henry VIII, and we're playing these roles of one after another, almost like you're creating stories for the one. We're the ones that are creating. I don't know if you saw the podcast I did where I basically got an intuitive insight. And then I contacted this Mark Sims guy who got from this being that he's with for 14 days, told the same thing, was that God doesn't create anything. God is the one. All he does is create the sparks of the divine, and the sparks of the divine are the ones that are creating the universe. So it's the duality, and they're creating planets and stories and stuff. And the one is just the observer watching all this kind of stuff. And so the beings sort of got into that as well. So if you got any questions for the beings, pass them on and I'll ask them, because they actually claim that they already know the questions I'm going to ask. And I'm thinking when the other girl told me that, I said, well, that's pretty weird because I don't even know the questions yet. But this is going to take place. It's like a trance channeling thing where the woman's going to zone out. She's going to disappear. And these beings sent me a message. And they said, I would get it. I'm the only one that they want to talk to. I would get what they're going to talk about. So we have our chance sort of to tap into, maybe figure out what that's about.
Well, Grant, you know, if they don't know what you're going to say, then I suggest to you that they may not be very powerful beings.
No, they said they know. They said
that's
they
what I said.
They know all the questions.
And if they said, well, we have no idea what he's going to say, my answer was, wait a minute, can't you move up and down timeline?
Yeah, yeah,
I mean,
yeah,
Willa Chrissing does all the time, you know. Yeah, she's Bashar 700 years in advance being. So, yeah, no, you would expect them to do that. Yeah. Now, is that surprising to hear? Of course it's surprising to hear, you know.
it's kind of weird that I hadn't even thought of the questions myself. And but they're pretty – not arrogant, but they're pretty assured of themselves that this is all going to happen. So yeah, that's what I find. And maybe you can talk to me as we close down here, this idea that the life that you and I live, I always talk about the fact that most people in life live lives of quiet desperation. They have no clue what's going on. They're just making a living. They're just going through, and somebody says, you got 6 months to live. And then they're scrambling, trying to figure out what the hell am I going to do now? Where am I going or whatever? And you and I get to play this unbelievable game. And I think you play the same thing as me. I was always a collector as a kid. I used to collect matchbook covers. I even got this collection of 17,000 matchbook covers from, it's 100 years old. And I was just good at collecting things. And I was just interested in the next thing and the next thing. And you've done the same thing. You've got these huge collections of stories and stuff like that. Do you feel like me that this is, you couldn't have lived a better life? I mean, it's like, get ready for the next life. You're going to be, you know, some, you know, poor guy in Africa, because we used up all our good life. I mean, we just like, you couldn't ask for a better life for what I've had in terms of the things I've experienced, the people I've met, just incredible.
Same here. There's no doubt about that. And we don't say that in an elitist way. You know, I sure hope nobody in your audience takes that as being that we're special, that look, we all create a plan for our lives. This was my plan. This was your plan. It was our plan to get together on things like this, share information, to take these different journeys. Your journey is as completely different as my journey is, even though they seem to be on parallel paths.
Yeah.
But they're totally different roads that we're taking, even though we can see each other and whatnot. You remember the thing about the train splitting and whatnot? This is what I'm looking for right now. If you ask me, what am I trying to pay attention to? What I am seeing happening more and more is that we're diverging into different sets of beliefs. We're diverging into really totally two different types of peoples. Peoples that don't get the clue, don't have any interest, they're not here for that. They're here for other reasons.
Yeah, yeah.
And people like ourselves that, you know, feel like we have a clue and want to research it and whatnot. And at some point, we're told that the vibrational difference between those folks and us, and again, this is not the elitist folks and the non-elite.
Yeah, yeah.
Just two different paths.
Yeah, yeah.
Somebody's taking I-95, somebody's taking I-40.
Yeah.
Okay?
Yeah.
Just two different paths. That's going to go away. And one day, I'm not sure I'll make it there. There's a good chance I will, because I believe open contact is going to happen here in the next 5 to 7 years. And I mean, real open, publicly known contact. And it's going to change everything, literally. But I see that splitting between people's ideas. And I'll tell you who absolutely catalyzed that for me. It was Donald Trump. I cannot tell you how many, I am apolitical. I don't take political stances. It's impossible not to take some type of opinion about Donald Trump.
Yeah.
And whether your opinion is this or your opinion is that, it is bifurcating. It is isolating.
Yeah.
It is very difficult to keep friendships alive and partnerships alive, not with my wife, but she hates Trump. But anyway, to keep those things alive when you have this huge separation of what is right and wrong, what's real and unreal. And I saw that as going, holy cow, this is really starting. We're getting this split.
Yeah.
It's not just a political split. It's a metaphysical split. It is a mental and emotional split. People will start to fall on one side or the other, Grant.
Yeah.
And as this goes along, there may be a day when you and I are having a conversation and we're looking back at this tape and we're going, what are we talking about? Where do those people go? You know, who are those people?
Yeah.
Because I think that at some point it's going to be untenable for those that have a particular level of interest and vibration and knowledge and those that do not, to be able to cohabit the same physical planet. I seriously mean that. And I think we will find ourselves on another Earth, and they will find themselves on the Earth they want to be on, which is perfect for their journey. Yep. And those twains will stop meeting. And I think that's happening very rapidly. Yep. And when open contact comes, it's all over.
We'll talk about that in next session, because we're going to do Bashar in next session. And Bashar is big on that concept. Well, last question for this session. I want to do another physical mediumship thing. We can sort of go over some of the stuff later with questions as to what we didn't discuss. I want to talk about Kevin Lee. I want to talk about this. If you can get into a little bit with the mediumship. Participatory mediumship, where you make things. When I saw that, I mean, that was like, holy cow, if I could see that, it was just like, wow. I mean, so just explain what that is.
Well, we're talking about two different things there. What Kevin Lee does is called, now you got me doing it. It's not participation. I'll think of it here in a second.
Precipitation mediumship.
What it is precipitation mediumship, which basically is, to make it very simple, is he will take a stack of blank cards,
yeah,
you know, put them in a box, ask a question, open the box up, and the answers will be written on.
Yeah, and with the colored crayons.
And the signatures of the author of that, so that you can match the signatures up, and the handwriting sometimes is a perfect match and the like. And it's just one of those things. It's sort of like, it feels almost like magic. You know, the guy says, look in the box, there's nothing in there. Close the box, look in the box, there's something in there. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I don't mean to be making fun of Kevin, because his precipitation means he's probably the most active, if not the best precipitation medium that I've ever seen, and maybe the only active one in the United States today. Is an old art that goes back to slate writing.
Yeah.
Back in the days when they didn't have ballpoint pens and the like, and they wrote on slates, and they put these empty slates in there, in these boxes, and then open the boxes up after they said, Spirit, tell me this. And they'd open the boxes up, and there would be the answer on the slate. And there'd be no chalk in the box.
Yeah.
So the Spirit not only had to write it, but he had to supply his own chalk. And that type of mediumship is really unusual, but it's highly evidential too. And I've sat in Kevin's house and watched him do stuff like that. And it's just kind of like, you know,
I come down there, you can get him to do that.
Oh, absolutely. Sure.
I would love to see that. This will be my last question. This is this idea of, I call the theory of wow. Do you think that the spirits, this is part of what it's about, that they want to impress, they want to amaze, they're trying to get across the message that there is a life after death, that we are here, and the only way you can really convince people is by really weird stuff, because if they just come to the message and say, okay, there's life after death, everybody goes, get out of here, but when they give you these weird things that you cannot explain, they're sort of producing this evidence, and they're working on the other side, they're trying to figure out what, even if we get in, like next time we can maybe get into the skull experiment, some of the really weird stuff, the people on the other side, and they said they had a team of 500 people on the other side working on this stuff, and they're thinking up new things to do. Is that what it's about? Or even if we go back to Bob Bigelow, when they asked him about Skinwalker Ranch, all that weird stuff that happened at Skinwalker Ranch over all those years, what do you think was going on? He said, oh, it's all messaging.
Absolutely. It's all messaging. Absolutely. Yeah, they're just grabbing you by the nose and smacking you around a little bit, trying to get your attention. And they know the best way to do that is to show you something that you don't think you believe could ever happen.
Yeah.
and that way it'll damn well stick with you. And so, absolutely. It's your wow theory of UFOs, why they have lights, it's physical mediumship, why do that? I mean, you just go on and on and on, and they're just, it's almost like they're, it's almost like they're making fun of us.
Yeah.
Really. I mean, really it is. I mean, they're saying, hey, idiots, watch this. You know, figure that one out. And the answer is there's no figuring it out. And one of the things I like very much about our conversation, Grant, is that we know daggum well we haven't got it figured out. We're not even close.
Yeah.
And that's the fun of it. that's the fun in is in moving down that path and getting a little bit here and a little bit there. And every time you pick up a little bit of knowledge and you look up the path, there's some more and there's more and more. You just keep picking and picking and picking up pebbles of knowledge until you get to a point where you have some understanding of something, something that at least you can deal with, something that you can make sense of in physical reality. Once we get out of here, it all makes sense. But for right now, yeah, it's really a fun situation, a very fun ride. And we are, again, not being elitist, we are just extremely fortunate to have picked, at least in this incarnation, which, by the way, we've got a million other incarnations going on at the same time.
Yeah.
So this is the one we just happen to be focusing on between you and me right now. But all those things happening, it's just, I mean, you know, Grant, we're stuck in this container of physical reality. And I'm looking forward to getting back to the point. This is what I think I'm trying to do. I'm trying to get back to the point where this is no longer amazing to me, that it's no longer anything more than just another day at the office. You know, you understand what I'm saying there? It's a fight to get out of my own way. That's exactly what it is. I'm fighting to get out of my own way. And as woke as I'd like to think I am, I still feel like I'm just smothered in blankets of doubt and uncertainty and things that I want to investigate and don't know why. And but then again, that's where the fun is too, isn't it?
Yeah, that's what I've noticed. And you could probably back me up on this, is that when you look back where you started, before I do, because I have no interest in UFOs, and where I am now, that's why I say, I may not know what's going on, but I can tell you it's 1,000 times more complex than what you think it is. Because the more you look at it, the more you realize, like, wow. And when I go back, that's why I say where I feel lucky. Because when I go back, I was one of those people in 1974 going to university. I didn't know what the hell I was going to do with this university stuff. Had no idea about anything and didn't believe there was any miracles. You know, they happen, maybe happened in the Bible, but there's nothing happening here. And then suddenly this thing is right in your face and you go like, what is going on here? And the amount that I've changed since 1974 is like unbelievable. It's not two different people.
I'll give you just a real quick story. And it's one that I'm ever grateful for, because it started, I believe this is really where this whole idea of what the hell is going on happened for me. I was in 1960, I was 8 years of age, and my father took me to a baseball game. A professional game in Memphis, Tennessee, and it's a big deal. Memphis, little cow town, professional baseball is coming there. Watch the game. I know who hit. I know everything about it. I remember it like it was yesterday. And halfway through the game, I had to go to the bathroom. And this was at Rustwood Park, which was one of these old parks basically made out of wood. And so I go into the bathroom and again the bathroom, and I no sooner close the door than it becomes unbelievably hot. I mean, so hot that I could hardly touch the door. So I pried the door open, ran out there, you know, didn't ever go to the bathroom, told my father about it at some point. And I said, this place is going to burn down. And, you know, my dad, nice dad, he goes, the strange one has come forward again. And so we go off and we stop on our way home to have a drink. My father wanted to have a drink with one of his friends and friends of ours. And we turn the TV on, boom, there it is. Park's burning down.
Wow.
My father turns around and looks at me like, what in the hell is going on? And I just turned and said, told you. Well, that's when it changed for me. Because from that on, I had multiple experiences, including a C5 encounter of the like. But that at 8 years of age, that absolutely rocked my world, because I knew it absolutely right then. I didn't have a clue what was going on. And I had no idea what that was about, but it was something and it was important.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's where we all come from. It's something and it's important. Yeah. Now, our job is to figure out what that something is and what's important about it. And hopefully we get better at that as we go along. But if not, it's a great journey. It's a great ride. Grant, thanks so much.
Yeah, thank you so much. I mean, it's like sitting there watching the Super Bowl, and to be joining up with you, who have so much material and so much knowledge. I appreciate what you've done for the physical mediumship, and I still haven't been at one of these sessions, So for me, it'll still be a real wow effect when I, because you can hear it. It's the same thing when people hear your UFO stories or stuff, and but it's a different thing when it's right in front of you. And it's like, you know, it's different than people can't understand. I remember they're asking me the question about information, and you probably had this experience as well. In the Denver group, I was asked a question like, so how do you know when you get sort of like, you think one of these download things, when you, how do you know that's just not you? And I say, because when it happens to you, I say, it's look up noetic. It's like God is talking to you. I know this is for real. Don't tell me. and there's something different. But unless you have that experience where you get that certainty of this information and whatever, you can talk to people till they're blue in the face, and you are not going to, you're never going to explain it. You have to experience it.
You have to experience it. You can't explain it except in just factual terms. You know, this happened, that happened, these events and whatnot. But you know what? It's all you talking to you. It's not really some spirit or some alien or it's your higher mind. It's talking to you. It's telling you what, you know, what to go look over here. This is exciting. Yeah. You're talking to yourself, and because everything folds in, nothing folds out. Who was it that said there's nothing out there?
Yeah. It's John Wheeler. There is no out there.
Yeah. And there is nothing out there. Yeah. It's all inside. And I understand that's hard for people. Some people get wrap their minds around, but if you'll start there and think of things as happening from you instead of to you, because of you instead of because of who you are, because of what you can do, but we're very, very powerful beings.
Yeah.
And one day we'll all have this, we'll be sitting up wherever we are, in whatever realm we are, and joking around and talking about what a bunch of fools we were down here.
And hopefully we can move.
At least we had fun doing it, though.
Yeah, hopefully we can move it a little bit, because I have empathy for the people who don't understand. Because I mean, if it weren't for the experiences, we'd probably be the same situation. It
absolutely.
Is. You have to have absolutely. Empathy for people who have not had the experiences that we've had, and realize it could be us, or in our next lifetime, it may be us, or whatever. So we value, and that's where it always sort of drives me is because I was raised very religious, and the Bible says too much is given, much is expected. And Edgar Casey said, knowledge not used is sin. So if you get the information, you can't go there after you die and then say, well, you know, I would have done something. I would have stopped watching baseball. But, you know, the onus is on you to use what you've got. Too much is given, much is expected. So I always try to keep that in the back of my mind and do what I can. But I agree with you. I mean, it's like being at the Super Bowl every day watching just – and if you feel honored that you've got to play the right game. So, and thank you for what you've done, and let's keep going. And what do you intend to do with your stuff when you're gone? Have you got a lot of large collection like I have? You got plans for good?
Yeah, I have taken two or three hard drives, multiple terabyte hard drives, and loaded them with everything that I would like to archive.
Wow.
And then I have two copies of each hard drive. So I have three plus the originals on my computer, plus the originals that I upload to my uCloud account.
Yeah.
I'm hoping between the five sources, I'll be able to figure out how to archive some of it. Archive all of it, actually. But it has nothing to do really about me. It's about the information.
Yeah.
And I just want the information available. And somebody trips along one day and finds this. My kids know about it. My wife knows about it. People that I'm close to now, like you, know about it.
Yeah.
I'll be happy to put a copy with the University of Manitoba, if that's anywhere, just to have the copies out there. And I've got one of these hard drives, sets of hard drives, put away where I won't tell anybody.
Yeah.
Again, it's not the it's information that's so unbelievable or astonishing, but it's this: we keep forgetting from where we came from.
Yeah.
We keep forgetting our Egyptian information, our Grecian information, our Roman information, our Sumerian information, and all our Anunnaki information. We can't even remember 15 minutes ago what we ate. So I mean, it's just a matter of, not about me, it's just like, here's the information. Information will find its own home. I've just got to make sure it's available as best I can do my part.
Good. Good. Yeah, I agree. It's I always refer to it as like living at the time of the signing of the Constitution or the birth of Jesus or whatever, that you lived at that time. You got to be there and you record it for history, because it will fade away unless you record it, that we're honored to be in this place and to put it out. So you know, I always tell experiencers, like, have you written this down? Even just for your kid, write it down so your kid knows what happened. In case there's a disclosure and openness, and then it's like, oh, I, you know, they'd be scrambling to find out what was going on, that we have this material. And it just sort of always scares me that, you know, you could die tomorrow and my kid has no interest in it at all, and it would all be sort of gone. And
yeah, I understand that, and I've left in my very, very brief will a copy of each of those to my kids. I have two adult sons, one to my wife. And for that matter, anybody that wants, I'll be happy to, you know, give access and copies to. It's a matter of throwing it around enough different places that it can't, hopefully cannot just get eradicated by the, you know, silly little interim attention spans that we have here.
Beautiful. Okay, we'll leave it at that. Next time we'll talk about Bashar and a little bit more about physical mediumship again. I really enjoyed it. You're a wealth of knowledge, and I just appreciate having met you and what you've done.
Oh, man, thanks a lot. Look, this has been a lot of fun, and if it wasn't fun, we wouldn't be doing it, would we?
Exactly. That's the thing. That's why I sort of feel, you know, honored that, you know, I get to play this. It's like every day. It's like just like being in a candy store all the time. It's just unreal.
Well, enjoy it. You do a great job. I'm one of millions of people that out there that love you and adore you. Different. Well, maybe not millions.
We haven't done enough work to get there. Okay.
I haven't done enough work today. Thanks again. Tell Sinead I said hello.
Yeah.
When you run across her, and I kind of keep up with Desta a little bit and whatnot. So all of my Grant Cameron friends out there, I want to say hello to, and to those two. And again, thanks very much. Let's do it again soon.
Okay, and I have been given an offer to interview anybody I want from Contact the Desert. I picked 12 people. So if Sinead or Desta doesn't want, if you look at the Contact the Desert list and you see anybody you want, they're setting up the interviews for me, and it's to promote their conference. So it gives an opening, and I always appreciate when you come on to help interview, because it's not my favorite. I feel better when there's somebody else with me asking questions. So if you see anybody you want to interview there, be involved, I'll bring you in on the interviews.
Oh, absolutely. I'm sure that there will. I made a CITD a few years back. I was kind of thinking about making one this year, or Laughlin or something, you know. But
see, they're doing it online, but they want the promo stuff. So I'm doing a lot of their promo stuff for them.
Well, you know, and that's great. Sure, sure. I'll take a look at it. I'll be back to you.
Okay, and send me that little clip of the voices moving around the room.
Got it.
Good. Talk to you later.
Thanks, Grant. Good to see you, and thank you, everybody.
Namaste.
That's this week's episode of the Paranormal UFO Consciousness Podcast. I'm your host, Grant Cameron, hoping that you will join me for upcoming episodes. Links to my YouTube interviews, books, and my Facebook sites are in the show notes. If you love the podcast or learn something valuable, we'd love for you to subscribe, rate, or give a review on today's episode. If you would like a certain paranormal subject dealt with in the future, please let us know. Until next time, watch this space, and thank you so much for listening.